Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and today's conversation with David Winogrand, the Chief Information Officer of the U.S. Department of Navy. And joining us in our conversation is Tim Conway.
Dave, we spent a lot of time this morning talking about change. I guess the real question I have is that what do you see as the CIO's role in not only delivering change in programs like an MCI, but really in creating and leading change as the Navy progresses toward the future?
I think the measure of an effective CIO is the ability to lead change. You got to understand technology, but I believe firmly that technology is only a percentage of the answer. I may spend 20% of a day, you know, worrying about some technology issue, and 80% of the day worrying about the cultural change issues that go along with actually making an organization transform. And boy, there's so much that you can learn from that. And I could have spent the whole hour talking about that. But, you know, there are some important nuggets that you pick up. Change takes on two forms. There is evolutionary types of change. When we go and do knowledge management, it's a real grassroots kind of thing. You go to command and you say, you know, you could do this kind of stuff. You'd be a learning organization. That's great. They all get excited about it and they go off and do it. The beauty of evolutionary change is that it has great consensus and support. You can build a great little solution there. The problem is that evolutionary change on its own doesn't do sweeping enough change. And so while we've embraced this theory of teaching people to fish, we develop tools. We have tools about how you do knowledge management, how you develop a workforce, how you do critical infrastructure protection vulnerability assessments, and CDs or web-based tools. And we give these tools to commands. And if you think about it, if each command takes that tool and uses it to do knowledge management, they all end up doing knowledge management in a consistent way. And I get the same kind of answer that I would have gotten if I had just mandated that they all do knowledge management, but of course they all did it willingly. Problem is they may not all do it. And so sometimes in order to get broad sweeping change, you have to embark upon revolutionary change. We would not have a Navy Marine Corps intranet if we had not just said, you will do it. We would not have 2.5 million common access cards, smart cards in the hands of DoD people if we had not just said, we're going to go to a single smart card. And so you have to couple these evolutionary change approaches with revolutionary change approaches. Now, of course, the challenge with revolutionary change approaches is I didn't get each of your buy-in. And so, you know, I have to then deal with the personal cultural issues of changes coming to you. And there's a book about managing transitions that's out now, or the guy makes an interesting point about we don't like change. We don't like transitions because in order to have a new beginning, you must have an end, and people tend to not like endings. And so every time I do something that's sort of forceful, you have to worry about how you're going to deal with those cultural change issues. But you got to embrace them because the world is changing at such a fast pace. If you don't think about change, which means accepting some risks, you really do risk irrelevancy. And so we've learned a lot. We've learned about moving with speed. The solutions that are working best for us right now are those that we do in months. You know, take an e-business pilot like the one we talked about, put it into place in 3 months, leverage industry best practices, and go. The things that are not working well for us are the things where we try to build this perfect solution, build it to death, and 2 or 3 years later try to deliver it. Because in our world, over 2 or 3 years, technology changes, military people rotate in and out, political leadership comes and go, and you never quite close the deal. You got to move with speed. You got to look for forcing functions. You got to, like, say, if you're going to change a little, you might as well change a lot, right? There's no point just giving you a new computer if I'm not going to, you know, at the moment that you're going through that stress of changing a computer, I'm also delivering you new processes and those sorts of things. You need to think about how you change the status quo. We had a culture where, you know, once you were in the budget, I'm a legacy application, I got approved, and now I get $5 million a year, and next year I want $6 million, and so people go, well, why do you need an extra million? But you're basically in the game. And of course, it's those legacy applications that are the sort of the old mainframe client-server kind of solutions. They're not my web services view of the future of the world. And so, you know, it's the new stuff that is going to be wireless and web-based that really is where we need to focus, but of course, they're new. And so they get tortured to death. You know, where's your testing plan? Where's your business case? Where's your this? Where's your that? Before you ever get to the place where you say, let them go, let them try, because that's where I want to spend my money. That's why our legacy application process is so important, because that's where we're going into each of those people with the baby and saying, well, you know, that's not a web-based thing. That's not PK-enabled. That's not available in the enterprise portal. You are not part of the future vision. The status quo stuff needs to go in favor of the new path. And I think finally, and most importantly, it's this idea about the Indiana Jones movie, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and he's on the search for the Holy Grail, you know, and it's another IT analogy because he's got the little book and he knows what his vision is. You know, his dad's been shot. He has to find the Holy Grail to save his dad, and he gets to that chasm, and it's, you know, he's got to get across, and the book says it's a leap of faith. And, you know, his reaction is, oh, don't you hate that, right? Because, you know, but of course he eventually takes the step and there's a pathway and he gets across, and that's what this is about for all of our commands. There is that moment when you do have to take that leap of faith. And so you need to give people as much confidence that, you know, that they should be trusting to take that leap of faith. But in the end, in, you've got to find some way to encourage them to take it, or you will never get this change in.
Can you tell us a little bit about the web enablement, what web enablement means to the Department of the Navy, and can you expand upon the role of the department's new portal policy in achieving this objective?
You know, we've been getting it for a while. We have a senior leadership course that we teach at our Naval Postgraduate School, where we send our senior flag officers and general officers to it, and they go spend a couple of weeks talking to folks in Silicon Valley and elsewhere about what's going on in the world, and they come back, they're energized, they get it. They understand the power of the web, the power of the web in terms of access, that, you know, the flow of information, better security structures, all the things that go into being web-enabled. But then you turn around, look at your organization, you still got a lot of old legacy systems that aren't that kind, you know. And so we've embarked upon a lot of work to try to change that. We created a task force web team whose job was to go encourage and push for web-enabled solutions. And Monica Shepherd and her team of folks that have been doing that for the Department of the Navy have been doing an outstanding job. In order to have a web strategy work, though, you got to have a place for that stuff to hang. And so we have just released our policy for the Navy Marine Corps portal, our enterprise portal strategy that says, hey, we're going to have a constituent portal structure where you really will have a single front portal that you get to do work, whether you're aboard ship, you're at shore, you're in a hotel, you're at your wireless device waiting for the bus, whatever kind of channel delivery you need, you have a common access to the intellectual capital of the department. That will, again, be like the legacy application process where we have hundreds of portals growing. Portals became cool, so everybody wanted to build one. And, you know, I don't really need the Surface Warfare Officer School in New England to be the 505th place to build another portal. What I need them to do is to focus on content. They have content they want to deliver to students. You find that content, we'll give you the portal to hang it on as a database, as a transaction. And I don't need you to be the next person to worry about customized look and feel. And so with this portal strategy, linked with the Navy Marine Corps Internet, linked with this web-enabling path, what you see is this change now. Where in the past, you were the aircraft maintenance technician out on an aircraft carrier thousands of miles from home in the Pacific Ocean, and all you had to go by was your knowledge, your tech manuals, your engineering drawings, the knowledge of your supervisor, and you had to fix the plane. And now through a distance support portal, you can reach back to the engineer in Crane, Indiana, who actually designed that part that you're trying to work on, and have like a voice, video, data, whiteboard exchange with them. So now these young men and women that you would be so proud of, deployed far from home in harm's way, have the power to reach back to the literally hundreds of thousands of people that are back here in the United States. And all that expertise, all that knowledge, all that intellectual power is now available to them. And that's just compelling.
Could you tell us about your role as the chair of the Defense Smart Card Senior Coordinating Group?
Sure. Boy, I have a lot of great jobs, and that's another wonderful one, you know, being the chair of the smart card effort across the Department of the Navy. You know, we talked about NMCI being a big change management issue because it's going to touch 400,000 people's lives. Well, the smart card program is touching 4 million people's lives across all of DOD, and so, you know, everybody's got an opinion about that. We're really thrilled. I think that there's great kudos that go out to Mary Dixon, who runs the Access Card Office for the Department of Defense and is my sort of partner in crime in this adventure, and the folks at the Defense Manpower Data Center who actually do the programming and such that makes this program happen, because this is truly a testimony to the power of industry government partnerships. You know, we knew we needed a smart card. We knew we needed it for millions of people. We couldn't afford to build some government-only solution, and we really did get it. And we worked with industry, and we came up with standards where there weren't any, and we leveraged standards where they were, and we, you know, we did the right things. We said, you know, PKI digital certificates, we're going to live on this card, X509 version 3, you know, standard-based certificates, a global platform, the security structure that Visa and others use, Java card, you know, using all the sort of common approaches that would make this thing be affordable and that we wouldn't have to build all the things that make it work, right? X509 version 3 certificate is recognized by Microsoft Outlook. I don't have to build special stuff into every commercial product that I want to have touch the smart card. So I think we really got it right. And we got it right because of the work of people like Mary and Ken Shefflin and Robbie Brandewey and all the other folks who do this kind of work. We have 2.5 million smart cards out there now. It's one of the largest smart card deployments in the world. And it really is changing the way we work and live. And so if you followed me around today, when I go back to my office, I'll use this smart card to get into my office as my physical access badge. When I get up to my computer, I'll use the PKI digital certificates on the computer chip on the card to get on my computer and do cryptographic logon, much more secure than user IDs and passwords. I use the digital certificates to launch myself to secure websites. Again, getting past that idea about 50 websites I need to go to, so 50 passwords I'll keep on a yellow sticky. I use the digital certificates to do digital signatures, which of course are the key to electronic business. And so I'll file a travel claim this afternoon and digitally sign it. And then when I leave to go to lunch, I'll pull the card out of the computer, the screen will lock up, nobody else can be me, and off I go. And so this power of having a key, a digital key, in the hands of every sailor, every Marine, every airman, every soldier, every civilian, every contractor that works on our facilities is really a key part of this vision. It's the way that we get PKI in the hands of everybody, and it's the way that we really get this idea about e-business and digital signatures in place.
What advice would you give to someone considering a career in public service?
I think it's a wonderful calling, and you have to want that. As I said before, you know, I look around the nation and I see young men and women doing phenomenal things on behalf of all of us and defending this nation, and it just like makes your heart glad and you feel really proud. And there's a wonderful team spirit. I think it's particularly true of the military departments. It's a wonderful team camaraderie about being part of this together. And so there are some great opportunities, for public service. And it is that idea about service to the nation that is so important. So if that's the kind of stuff that turns you on, boy, there's like such opportunities now. The workforce is aging. People are retiring. The skill sets that are needed are different. We need people who are like web savvy. We need people who are internet meisters, you know, and so the skill sets that we need are the skill sets that the people coming out of high school and college have and, you know, and live this kind of multitasking kind of world. And so there are phenomenal opportunities for those that feel that calling to help serve the nation.
Well, Dave, thank you very much for joining us today. That's to be our last question, but Tim and I want to thank you for squeezing us in your busy schedule.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Paul. It's been great being here with you. I guess I could point out that if you liked anything you heard today, www.doncio.navy.mil is our CIO website and has more information about everything we talked about today. So thank you again.
Thank you. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with David Winogrand, Chief Information Officer of the Department of Navy. Be sure and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and research and get a transcript of today's fascinating conversation. Again, that's businessofgovernment.org. This is Paul Lawrence. Thank you for listening.